We're up to the book of Joshua. We will be covering the whole thing tonight. As you recall, at the end of Deuteronomy, at the last chapter, chapter 34, in verse 5 and verse 6, Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And God buried him in the valley of the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no man knows his burial place to this day. And so they mourned for Moses. They wept for Moses for a month. They wept for him. You know, you've got a big impact on people if they cry for a month. You know, if the funeral lasts like 30 days. And they wept and mourned for Moses. And now it says in Joshua chapter 1, verse 1, it came about after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' servant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, cross this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, to the sons of Israel. Every place on which the sole of your foot treads, I have given to you. The Lord says, Joshua, you're now the guy. Wow. You know what I think of when I read this? Literally every time I read this, I think of that very, very, I mean, it's a very sad picture, actually. And that is after John F. Kennedy was shot. And you see, and I believe it was taken on Air Force One when they're swearing in Lyndon Johnson. And I believe that President Kennedy's wife is standing there looking. But I just remember the look on his face, just very, very solemn. It was a terrible time. It must have been not only a sad time, but an overwhelming time. Suddenly, I'm the president of the United States. This all falls to me. And I'm the leader in a time where the country is at a huge crossroads. I don't know if I was alive then. I wasn't definitely not coherent when Kennedy was shot. I probably wasn't alive. Was that 64, somewhere around there? 63. And so if you remember that, then maybe you can kind of take those feelings you have about that and sort of look at it as this is a whole new time for Israel. Moses, the guy that has led them for 40 years, is dead. There's a brand new leader. It's Joshua. And Joshua has, let's say, courage problems. Most of the times when you think about Joshua, you think of Joshua the bold guy, right? Joshua the conqueror, the guy who led the men. Well, if you read chapter 1, I encourage you to read this whole book if you haven't already. If you read this, when you read this, notice how many times in the beginning he is told, be strong and courageous. He's constantly being told by the Lord and the people Moses had told him before, be strong and courageous. He constantly was being told that. Why? Because he was strong and courageous? No. Nobody ever comes up to me and says, Ron, tell bad jokes and talk for a long time. You know, it's like, I got that down, you know. But they were saying to Joshua, be strong and courageous. Over and over and over they were telling him this. And so you have to kind of, this tone, you have to put yourself sort of in Joshua's position. I'm in charge of several million people at this point. This is pretty scary. And so he is feeling a bit weak and a little bit scared. But God says, Joshua, you're now the guy. You are the man that's going to lead my people into Israel. And wherever you guys go, that's the land I'm going to give you. And then he outlines it. We talked about that last week, about how far into Egypt and how far over into Iraq and how far up into Lebanon the land of Israel truly was supposed to be and will be in the future. So verse 6, he tells them, be strong and courageous. Verse 7, he says, be strong and very courageous. Be careful, he says in verse 7, to do according to all the law of Moses. Or I'm sorry, the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Don't turn away from it to the right or to the left so that you may have success wherever you go. Don't deviate from the word and you'll have success. That's pretty plain and simple, isn't it? And yet, for some, it's a light bulb turning on. If you don't deviate from the word, you will have success. Remember the psalm. Blessed is the man whose delight is in the law of the Lord. On it he meditates day and night. He'll be like a tree planted by streams of water. In whatever he does, the psalmist said, that man prospers. Do you want to be successful in whatever you're doing? Don't deviate from the word. It's as simple as that. Give your attention to it. Don't forget it. Don't turn away from it. Meditate on it. This book of the law, it says in verse 8, shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do all that is written in it. Notice that. If you're not thinking about the word, you're not doing the word. If you're not meditating on it and focusing on it, you're drifting away from it. Well, Joshua tells the officers to tell the people that get ready, because in 3 days you're going to cross the Jordan. The generation before them should have gone, and he goes on to explain this. But then in chapter 2, Joshua sends two men in as spies. Now, at first, when you read this, especially after seeing the fiasco that happened when Moses sent in 12 spies, now Joshua's sending in spies. Is this a mistake? Is this, you know, you think, why repeat the sins of the past? What are you thinking? Well, what you're going to find out as you read the book of Joshua is that this wasn't spying out to see whether they should go in or where they should go in. These two guys, I don't even like the word spies so much as I would call them witnesses. Joshua sends in two witnesses. And I get that because there are so many parallels in the book of Joshua with the book of Revelation. And if you ever read the book of Revelation, read the book of Joshua right before it or right after it, and you will be amazed at the parallels that you will see in it. Everything down to the minutiae, the little details about the kings, the enemies of God that are kings, hiding in caves and crying, rocks fall on us and things. Just amazing things. And here, in the same way that God doing some sort of reconnaissance, you might say, by sending in the two witnesses, so too Joshua is sending in these two witnesses. In the book of Revelation, our real Joshua, the Yehoshua, Jesus Christ, leading the army of God to conquering the land. So too with the book of Joshua, Joshua leading the army of the people of God into the land and conquering the enemies of God. There's just a million parallels. We could spend all night just going back and forth between Revelation and Joshua. But I say that just so we probably won't cover almost any of those things tonight. But just so you keep those parallels in mind and you go through them and read those two books back to back, and you'll be quite amazed. So Joshua is not sending these two guys in like doubting. He's already said, guys, in 3 days, we're crossing the Jordan, or that's what we're doing. And so they went and came into the house of a harlot whose name was Rahab and lodged there. Now, again, people read that and say, what kind of guys did Joshua send out? This is not exactly the place that you'd want them to stay. Well, actually, in many ancient cities in the biblical times, that the hotels were the houses of prostitution. That's all there was, the houses of prostitution and the hotels. They were the same thing. And so here, you know, there's nothing immoral going on here. They're lodging there. They're staying there. But the king of Jericho finds out. They went into Jericho, into the city of Jericho. And the king of Jericho found out that a couple of the guys from Israel had come and they were searching out the land. And the king of Jericho sent word to Rahab saying, bring out the men who have come to you. Well, the woman, Rahab, it says in verse 4, had taken these two spies and hidden them. And she goes, oh yeah, the guys came, but I didn't know where they were from. And right about the time when it was getting dark and the gates to the city were closed, they took off and they didn't tell me where they were going. And instead she'd hid them up in the roof. Well, it's interesting that in verse 5 that she says, you know, and the guys went out and I don't know where they went, but if you pursue them quickly, you will overtake them. And to me, I always think, at this point, I always think of the cartoons, you know. Oh, he went that away. Oh, okay, thank you, you know. And it's just so, it's almost slapstick, you know. Where's those guys? Oh, they went, you know, they went that. Okay, thank you, you know. And run outside and we see that they pursued them. They ran down the road for a very long way trying to catch these two guys that were really hidden up in the roof. Well, then Rahab says to these guys in verse 9, I know that the Lord has given you the land. Word has gotten to us from, we've heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea and how you conquered these kings. And I mean, she actually says that the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and on earth beneath. In verse 11, he says, or she says that. She confesses the Lord as the Lord, not just, well, your God is as powerful as our gods. No, she says, your God is the real God. And so she says in verse 12, now therefore, please swear to me by the Lord, since I have dealt kindly with you, that you also will deal kindly with my father's household and give me a pledge of truth and spare my father and my mother and my brothers and my sisters. I want my family to be saved. I know God's given you our land. I know you're going to come in. You're going to be victorious. You're going to conquer us. I want you to spare our lives, me and my family, in the same way that I've spared yours, that I didn't turn you over to the king. Well, and they promised, okay, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. You know, don't tell our business here. And so she lets them down by a rope in the window, and she tells them where to hide. And they said, okay, here's the deal. Here's the signal. Take this scarlet cord, this red cord, and tie it outside your house there. And tie it in the window. And anybody, ooh, wow. I've been clumsy today. It's been crazy. Anyone who's inside your house when we come in and conquer, inside this house marked by this scarlet cord, we'll save them. We won't kill them. Sounds very familiar to something back in like Exodus 12, doesn't it? Or even, was that, it might have been earlier than Exodus 12. Back in the Passover when the blood of the Lamb was applied to the houses and everyone inside those houses were saved. Sounds very similar, as a matter of fact, to many things in the scriptures that culminate in the firstborn, the Son of God, the only begotten Son, Jesus Christ. When he is applied to our lives, then we are saved from this judgment of death. And if you trace that through, if you trace out this idea of the scarlet cord, it runs all through and it marks the firstborn. Remember when the twins were born in the book of Genesis, the firstborn, his hand was tied with a scarlet thread to show he was the firstborn son. And then there was in the book of Leviticus, the cleansing of the leper, that ceremony that pictured the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Again, the scarlet cord was involved with that as well. And so everything all ties together. Get a concordance, read all those things together, and you'll see, wow, the Lord was picturing Jesus Christ all this, all the way through. And so they said, here's the cord of scarlet thread, put it in the window, you and your whole household will be saved, anybody that's with you in the house. So verse 23, the two guys come back to Joshua, and chapter 3 begins. And verse 3 of chapter 3, the people are told, when you see the ark of the covenant of the Lord your God, with the Levitical priests carrying it, you shall set out from your place and go after it. So the ark is going to lead the way. The Levites, Levitical priests are going to be carrying the ark. And now stay a distance away from it, but that's the direction you want to go. Now, in verse 8, they were commanded, when you come to the edge of the waters of the Jordan, you shall stand still in the Jordan. Now, that doesn't seem like a very big deal until you realize at this point in the year, at harvest time, it's impossible to stand still in the Jordan. You cannot walk out into the Jordan because at this time of year, the Jordan always overflows its banks. I mean, it's a mighty rushing river. There's no way that you could walk into it and stand still. And yet they're told to do this. Well, verse 13, here's the secret. The soles of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord of all the earth, rest in the waters of the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan will be cut off, and the waters which are flowing down from above will stand in one heap That's pretty amazing. If you guys, I'm going to tell you to walk out to the middle of the river. As soon as you start walking out there, the river is going to stop. But it's not going to dry up to a trickle. A little bit upstream, oh, it'll be flowing, but it's going to be piling up. And you picture that. And a lot of times we think about the Red Sea, about how there's a wall of water on each side, and think, that's amazing. That's incredible. I think it would be just as amazing to be looking upstream and see the pile of water, this heap of water getting bigger and bigger as these waters are flowing. Just amazing. And so, verse 15, there's that note, the Jordan overflows all its banks in the days of harvest. And so the people across the Jordan, they're opposite Jericho. The priests who carried the ark, verse 17, stood firm on dry ground in the middle of the Jordan. That's an impossibility apart from the miraculous intervention of God. So the people, they're crossing opposite Jericho there. And then they get to the other side, and Joshua says, hey, 12 guys need to go back. Here's the water. It's piling up. It's standing up in a heap. It's getting bigger and bigger. The Levitical priests are standing on dry ground in the middle of what used to be a rushing river moments before, maybe at this point hours before. And Joshua says, take 12 guys and go back. Go back to the middle of the river where these guys are standing, and each of you pick up a rock from the bottom of the river. Oh, right now it's on dry ground. And go get yourself 12 stones from here out in the middle of the Jordan, and then pile them up, you know. He says, let this be a sign among you, verse 6, so that when your children ask later, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall say to them, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever. I was thinking about this, about my kids as they were growing up and the questions that they would ask. We'd have a picture hanging on the wall, and they would say, you know, where was that taken? Or tell me about your grandma, or, you know, and different ideas, or dad, you know, what do you remember about having really long hair? You know, just strange things like that. And, well, kids, it took a long time to dry. It took a lot of shampoo. And, yeah, you know, kids will ask questions about the things in the house and in the area. It's a kid's natural inquisitive nature. Dad, what's this pile of rocks here? What's that all about? You know, you might have a hard time believing this, son, but I got these in the middle of the river during the days of harvest. Oh, Dad, you're pulling my leg. No, really. Really, there was 12 of us, and we went and got these rocks right out of the middle of the river. It was dry. And then telling the story about God's faithfulness. And I've just been considering that whole idea of God saying, actually, plant something here, put something here, so that your kids will inquire and be ministered to. And especially you with young kids. Do you have an altar? And don't misunderstand me about this. We'll find out later in the book of Joshua there is a misunderstanding about an altar. But do you have an altar? Do you have a memorial? Do you have something to inspire your kids' inquisitive nature to say, Mom, Dad, what does this mean? So that you can say, you know what? This always reminds me of the time when God was faithful to do a miracle, when God restored this person or healed this person, or when God saved me, or when God, you know, brought your mom and I through this really difficult time by just intervening miraculously. Whatever it is, do you have those things established in your home so that the kids will ask? And so it's to be this memorial that they set up. And then when this happened, you can imagine they had been following Moses for 40 years. You can imagine how they felt about Moses seeing all of these miracles take place. Well, on that day, it says in verse 14, the Lord exalted Joshua in the sight of all Israel. So they revered him just as they had revered Moses all the days of his life. Now, the Lord tells Joshua to tell the priests to come up out of the Jordan. And so when the priests, and says in verse 18, when the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord had come up from the middle of the Jordan, and the soles of the priests' feet were lifted up to the dry ground, that the waters of the Jordan returned to their place and went all over its banks as before. Man, that must have been a sight. You know, when if you've ever been outside of one of these big, like the Hoover Dam or something, where they are opening up the floodgates to let off some extra flow or whatever, we've seen huge bodies of water where there's nothing, and then suddenly the pipe is going. Well, you don't see that in biblical days anywhere, and so we just walked across this river. We turn around. What's that noise? Well, the heap of water then just erupted and went down, overflowing the banks, just a huge thing, bigger than any flash flood they might have ever seen. And so went over all the banks there, and the people come up from the Jordan, verse 19, on the 10th of the first month, camped at Gilgal on the eastern edge of the Jordan. Well, then God talks to Joshua about an uncomfortable and a difficult subject, but a necessary one. All the people who had come out of Egypt, they'd all been circumcised. However, all the people who just entered into the land of Canaan, all the guys, they hadn't been circumcised. The sons of Israel hadn't been faithful to obey the commandment of God. And so then they had to be circumcised. All the children that God had raised up in their place, Joshua circumcised. It says when they'd finished circumcising all the nation in chapter 5, verse 8, they remained in their places in the camp until they were healed. And then it says in verse 10, this is 4 days after they crossed over, they observed the Passover on the 14th day of the month of the desert, on the desert plains of Jericho. Then the day after Passover, on that very day, they ate some of the produce of the land, unleavened cakes and parched grain. They had just crossed over into the promised land. They ate some of the fruit of the land. And it says in verse 12 that the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten some of the produce of the land. That's kind of a melancholy sort of thing when I think about it. I think of wow, I woke up this morning and God didn't provide miraculously the way he'd been doing 6 days a week for as long as I could remember. Well, he's providing in a different way. Now he's providing naturally. Before it was supernaturally, but now he's providing naturally. Before it was the manna, the bread from heaven appearing on the ground 6 days a week, every day but the Sabbath day. And now he's led them into the promised land and they're eating from the fruit of the land. God ceases that. He puts a stop to that. He puts a stop to the bread from heaven coming down. And I think about the fact that at that point, that was probably a little sad. Even though they'd been complaining about it for most of the time, they'd been eating it. Now it's like, oh, it's not there anymore. You know, if you've ever been in serious financial difficulty, and most of us have been at that place, maybe some are still, maybe most of us can remember a time in the recent past where we were depending on the Lord for every penny, for every meal, for every dollar. It had to come from God because we didn't have any, right? And we complained a lot about that, didn't we? About man, you know, having no money and things. And then God takes us out of that season, moves us into another season. And you look back and you go, you know, I depended on God a lot more back then. And so we're not happy when it's happening. And then we're not happy when it stops. It's kind of odd. And so don't despise the days that you're in. If you have little or if you have much, be content with the way God has provided. Sometimes he's providing with the manna, it's fallen right out of the sky, you know. And sometimes he's providing with, hey, I moved you into this land, it's prosperous, you got a paycheck now. And God's providing either way. So the manna did cease on that day. In verse 13, when Joshua was by Jericho, he's out there walking around, and a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua says, you know, whose side are you on? Are you on our side or their side or our adversaries? And in verse 14, this guy answers, no. It's like, are you on side A or on your side B? No. Rather, I indeed come now as the captain of the host of the Lord. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down and said, what has my Lord to say to his servant? The captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, now before I read this, you probably think this is an angel. Up until he says, remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. Angels don't let that happen. Angels don't let people fall down in front of them. Angels don't say, hey, take off your shoes. This is holy ground. This is the captain of the Lord's host. It's Jesus Christ. It's what theologians call a Christophany or a theophany, an Old Testament manifest physical appearance of Jesus Christ. And so Joshua did so. Now, Jericho is tightly shut in. You know, I don't know if you can see Jericho from the Jordan, but if you could and you lived in Jericho, you're really scared at this point. These guys walked right into the river and it stopped. We're in big trouble. And so they shut it up tight, you know, and they locked the gates and closed all the windows and didn't let the kids play outside. The Lord said to Joshua, see, I've given Jericho into your hand with its king and the valiant warriors. Now here's the plan. You shall march around the city, all the men of war, circling the city once. You shall do so for 6 days. And I can picture as this is happening, Joshua's taking notes. Okay, all right, this is good. All right, yeah, we'll intimidate him. We'll show him we're not afraid of him. 6 days. All right, 7th day, we'll like burn the place down. Or maybe, you know, what are we going to do next, Lord? Interesting. The 7 priests are going to carry 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the ark. And so on the 7th day, you're going to march around the city 7 times, and the priests are going to blow the trumpets. And it shall be when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city will fall down flat. Okay, Lord, I was with you up until that whole wall thing, you know. And now remember that Joshua now has to go back and say, guys, I've been praying about it. This is our plan of attack. We're going to march around. Yeah, okay, yeah. Once a day for 6 days. Yeah, okay. And we're going to have the horns. Okay, that's good. That's good. That'll scare him. You know, we're all going to shout. Yeah, that's good. And then the wall's going to fall down. Okay, I missed the part where you sent the guys in with the plastic explosives to make the wall fall down. What's the story here? Can you imagine trying to sell that? There are times when I've really just felt like wow, you know, I got to talk to the church leadership about I feel like God's taking us in this direction. And I think, Lord, this is kind of crazy. This is a little kooky. I never had to sell them on anything like this. Really, no, the Lord's behind it. The wall's just going to fall down. Well, Joshua told the people, don't shout, don't let your voice be heard, don't let a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I tell you shout, then you shall shout. And I love that because basically what he's saying is, don't talk for 6 days. You ever do that with your kids? Okay, kids, let's play the quiet game. Who can be quiet the longest? I lose! So he says that as this is happening, the city is going to be under the ban. It and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. When something's put under the ban, that means it's banned. Don't touch it, you know. And it belongs to the Lord, everything. In verse 18, he says, keep yourselves from the things under the ban so that you do not covet them and take some and make the camp of Israel accursed and bring trouble on it. So the people, they marched around, they did the 6 day thing, then they marched around again on the 7th day all those times, and the people shouted, the priest blew the trumpets, and when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. Wow. And so they went in, they utterly destroyed everything in the city. Verse 24 said, they burned the city with fire and all that was in it. And you say, oh, wait, time out. What happened to Rahab? what happened to the scarlet cord tied the window? Oh, we burned that. We didn't know about that. Sorry. No, actually, they did. The spies were faithful that they went in, and Joshua sent the two guys in there, and they took her out. They took Rahab out with all these people. Look at this. With her father and her mother and her brothers and all she had. Rahab was not shy about witnessing about the power of God and about saying, hey, I'm worshiping a different God now, and if you want to be saved, you better do that too. You just meet me in my house in 3 days, you know. And so, verse 25, Rahab the harlot and her father's household, all that she had, Joshua spared, and she has lived in the midst of Israel to this day. This is the oldest woman in the world. She's like 2008. Oh. You know, remember that Joshua's writing this, and so when he's writing this, Rahab is still living among the people of Israel there. And her descendants, for all we know, her descendants may live in Israel today. They may be Russian, you know, immigrant Jews. We have no idea that, but it would seem that they were welcomed in. And so, verse 26, cursed before the Lord is the man who rises up and builds this city, Jericho, Joshua says. The city has fallen down flat. They've destroyed it. They burned it with fire. It's a pile of smoldering ashes and rubble. And he says, anybody that rebuilds this city is cursed. And he's going to build this. He's going to lay its foundation with the loss of his firstborn. He's going to set up its gates with the loss of his youngest son. He's saying, anybody who tries to build this city again, his kids are going to die. Now, you gotta, if you hear that, this is not one of those, I dare you to put your tongue on the frozen flagpole. this is not like, this is beyond foolishness to hear there's a curse on this that Joshua said that the Lord's going to curse with the death of his two children anyone who tries to rebuild this city. Well, it would take a real fool to try and do it. If you go to 1 Kings chapter 16, there was a guy not known for his brilliance or his righteousness. 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 34. Talking about Ahab. You remember Ahab. He's the guy that was worshiping Baal. He was the king over Israel, the northern kingdom of Israel, the one that had been fallen into idolatry. And certainly Ahab was, although he was king, he was no prince, you might say. And he built the altars to Baal, and he made the Asherah pole. And verse 33 says, Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who were before him. This guy's a winner. Now, in his days, there's Hiel, the Bethelite. Hiel, the Bethelite. He built Jericho. It's like Ahab, you know, not really, you know, I'm sure Ahab had to approve the blueprints and everything. Yeah. Oh, you go for it. Yeah, really, that'll be good. Hiel, the Bethelite, builds Jericho. Guess what? He laid its foundations with the loss of Abiram, his firstborn, and set up its gates with the loss of his youngest son, Segub, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. Now, Ahab was so broken up about this that he quit the kingdom. He took to sea and began hunting whales. And, sorry. All right. Yeah. You realize the double whammy you just got by the piracy thing, didn't you? Okay. All right. So in the days of Ahab, a guy actually, Hiel, the Bethelite, actually did try and do this. And he was successful, but he lost as well. Then in chapter 7, back in Joshua in chapter 7, we read about a guy named Achan from the tribe of Judah. He took some of the things under the ban. Therefore, the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. Joshua not knowing this, from Jericho, sent some guys to spy out Ai, another city, not as big one, not a big intimidating one, go up and spy it out. Well, they come back and they said, you know, don't even send everybody. You know, only about 2,000 or 3,000 men need to go up to Ai. They're few there. They were coming off a really big victory, and they're saying, you know, 2,000 or 3,000 guys, we could take this. It's like, it's Ai, it's like smaller than Pine Bluffs, okay? We'll be still be outnumbering them 3-1. So about 3,000 men from the people went up there, but they fled from the men of Ai. The men of Ai struck down about 36 of them and pursued them, chased after them. What happened? We had these guys outnumbered, and we're running from them. They're killing some of us. Joshua goes to the Lord. Lord, what's going on? The Lord says to Joshua, Israel has sinned. Wait a second. We're like, we just got to the promised land. We haven't had time to sin. Well, no. He says, because of the sin, verse 12, the sons of Israel can't stand before their enemies. And I won't be with you anymore unless you destroy the things under the ban from your midst. There have been a lot of times in my Christian walk where I've gone back to this verse. I remember the first time I was a brand new Christian. And a girl that I knew that had also recently become a Christian was sharing with me about God doing something in her heart. And she said, I knew that I could not grow as a Christian until I dealt with this issue. That I couldn't go any farther with the Lord. And that he wouldn't be with me until I did that. And she was faithful to do it and continued to grow in the Lord. But I think of this verse when God says, hey, and until you destroy those things that are under the ban, that you weren't to touch, until you destroy those, I'm not going to be with you anymore. I'll be right here, you know, I'll be right here when you come back. And there's a lot of times in our Christian walk where we end up doing that, where God says, hey, I'll be right here, come back anytime you want to. You know, I'm not going to be with you until you deal with this issue. Well, they dealt with the issue. They went through a whole process of bringing all the tribes of Israel one by one and then picking the tribe of Judah. And then all the families of the tribe of Judah went and picked out this family. And they finally got to Achan. And Joshua said, Achan, what's the story here? Achan answered and said, well, this is what I did. Verse 21. When I saw among the spoil, this is when we conquered Jericho here. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful mantle from Shinar, And 200 gold shekels of silver and a bar of gold, 50 shekels in weight, I coveted them and I took them. Behold, they are concealed in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath it. Well, they ran to the tent, they got that stuff, dug it up and brought it out, poured it out before the Lord. Joshua says in verse 24, Joshua and all Israel with him took Achan, the son of Zerah, the silver, the mantle, the bar of gold, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, his tent, and all that belonged to him. They brought him up to the valley of Achor. Joshua said, why have you troubled us? The Lord will trouble you this day. And all Israel stoned them with stones, and then they burned them with fire, after they had stoned them with stones. This is pretty severe. They stoned him with stones to death. They took rocks and threw rocks at him until he was dead. Actually, all of them were dead. And then they burned him. We can understand why he was named Achan. That didn't even deserve an R. And so, as a result of this, the Lord turned from the fierceness of his anger. Now, what I really want to say, in all seriousness, is if you notice, they didn't take the stuff and destroy it or give it to the Lord, tell Achan, bad, don't do that anymore. They killed him. As a matter of fact, they killed his sons and his daughters, and his entire family and everything he owned. Do you realize, men of God, that when you take things that are under the ban, that it's not just you will bring injury to. It's your whole family. It's your wife. It's your kids. It's everything. It's everything. It's not just your sin anymore. They all suffer for it. They all suffer for it. And I'm interested to see the difference in, there's Rahab who said, your God is God. And her whole family was spared because she had that righteous inclination. Achan wasn't afraid of God, and he coveted all these things and took them. And as a result, his whole family was killed. Big motivation, not just for our own walk with God, but for our family's well-being, that we need to worship the Lord and not covet that which God has put under the ban. And so the Lord did turn from the fierceness of his anger. In chapter 8, they were able to conquer Ai. And this is interesting, the way that they did this. This time, they didn't send 3,000 people. Joshua picked 30,000 people. 30,000 guys, and sent them out at night and got them to go behind the city. Okay? Then he took another, I think it was 5,000. I'm not seeing the number here. Yes, he took about 5,000 men. And they march up here. They march up to the front of the gate. And the men of Ai go, oh good, more Israelites to chase down. And so the men of Ai go out. Now it's a bigger crowd. So all the people, it says in verse 16, all the people who were in the city were called together to pursue them. So there's almost twice as many people now as there was before. And so let's get all the guys in the city. We'll chase them down. Well, you know, and so Joshua and these 5,000 guys, they went, whoo, and turned around and started running away. And everybody, all the guys in the city go running out after them. Well, there's 30,000 of the Israelites behind the city. They come around and they get in. Nobody's left. And then set the city on fire. And so here's the men of Ai chasing after, and Joshua and his men going, oh, you know. And then they stop and they turn around with their swords and they go, you might want to take a look at your city. And they turned around here, that when Ai turned back and looked, behold, the smoke of the city ascended to the sky, and they had no place to flee this way or that, for the people who had been fleeing to the wilderness turned against the pursuers. So they're looking at this going, there's 30,000 guys burning our city down. There's 5,000 guys now that have turned back and they're attacking us. You got nowhere to go. It's like the rock and the hard place kind of thing. So they were killed. Joshua there built an altar to the Lord in Mount Ebal after this, down in verse 30. Just as Moses had commanded, and remember Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim, the symbol of the blessing and the curse, how half the tribes were to go on one side, half the tribes were going on the other side. The Levites would go through. They would recite, blessed is he who keeps this law, and cursed is he who doesn't. And they would get very specific, and all the people would say, amen. And so they did it in the same way that Moses had told them to, as we looked at in Deuteronomy. Now it happens at the end of chapter 8. Then in chapter 9, the Gibeonites, the inhabitants of Gibeon, they acted craftily after they heard of the Israelites moving in next door. They took worn-out sacks, old wineskins, torn and mended ones, and got old shoes, you know, the shoes they mowed the lawn in or something. They worn-out clothes and got old crumbly bread, and they looked really bad. And they piled all this stuff on donkeys and made them walk really slow. And they came up and they said, hey, guys, we've come from a really far country. Now, therefore, make a covenant with us. I don't know. How do we know you're coming from a far country? The Israelites said, look at us. We're a mess. Our shoes are worn out. Our wineskins. This bread was warm right out of the oven when we took it. Look, now it looks like it came from the dumpster of the Wonder Bread thrift store. You know, it's old. Yeah, I bet you're wondering how I know what the bread and the... No. just looking for the manna. And so they said, yeah, we're from far away. How do we know you're not from nearby? Really, we're from far away. okay, we believe you're from far away. Verse 14, the men of Israel checked out their provisions, did not ask for the counsel of the Lord. And so Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. Oh, man, they just messed up. They made a common sense decision instead of praying about it. You know, we were just talking in the office the other day. A guy came in and said, yeah, you know, I've got this thing. It's going on. It's not going very well. Well, what happened? Well, that was the one thing in this whole thing I didn't pray about. So I made a bad decision. So now I'm suffering the consequences from it. Well, so too, you don't ask for the counsel of the Lord in any situation, and you end up making the wrong kind of covenants. Well, then they found out they were neighbors, that they were living right next door pretty much. And so they had to be faithful. The righteous man, the Bible says, the righteous man swears to his own hurt. You made a covenant. You can't violate it. So now you're allied with the Gibeonites. Great, great job, guys. Well, then these five kings, Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had captured Ai, had made peace with the inhabitants of Gibeon, and he was kind of worried about that because the Israelites are now in his land. They're going to come for him pretty soon. So Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent word to the king of Hebron. The king of Hebron was always bored. That's why they call him Ho-Hum. And to Biram, king of Yarmuth, and to Japhia, king of Lachish, and to Debir, king of Eglon, saying, come up and help me to attack Gibeon, for it's made peace with Joshua and with the sons of Israel. So they thought, well, we'll attack Gibeon. We can take the Gibeonites. Well, what they didn't realize is that when the men of Gibeon sent to Joshua, the sons of Israel, that said, hey, you need to come and save us, Joshua comes up from Gilgal, and in verse 9, Joshua came upon them suddenly by marching all night from Gilgal. See, they weren't expecting the people of God to move so quickly. And I think there's a lot of truth in this, that if the Lord is directing us, for the Lord does say, hey, go up there. In verse 8, he told them, hey, I'm giving them into your hands. When we obey the Lord quickly and we expend that effort to go into the battle, then God will confound our enemies and give us the victory. I think there's a lot of application in there, but we need to move on. So the Lord did confound the enemies and slew them with a slaughter at Gibeon. And then the Lord gets in on the act too. In verse 11, as they were fleeing, the Lord throws large stones from heaven on them. You know, hey, it just goes to show you that no matter how fast you run, you can't outrun the Lord. You know, so you can try and escape from the Israelites, but God will just throw rocks at you. So, and more died from the hailstones than those who the Lord of, or those who the sons of Israel killed with the sword. Now, they were continuing to wipe these guys out, and they're running out of daylight, you know. So Joshua prayed and said, you know, hey, Lord, you know, make the sun stand still. So it did. Stood up there for about a day while Israelites continued to fight. Well, the five kings, as I said earlier, the five kings fled and hid themselves in the cave, and then ultimately they were put to death. As the book of Joshua continues in chapter 10, it begins to list, it's great detail. If you have a map, a biblical map of Israel, and then you go through this, you'll see how they moved in and began to conquer all the southern part of the kingdom. And then in chapter 11, they began to conquer the northern part of the kingdom. It says in verse 18 of chapter 11 that Joshua waged war a long time with all these kings. There was not a city which made peace with the sons of Israel except the Hivites living in Gibeon. They took them all in battle, for it was of the Lord to harden their hearts, to meet Israel in battle, that he might utterly destroy them, that they might receive no mercy, but that he might destroy them. And it makes a note here in verse 22, there was no Anakim left in the land of Israel, only in Gaza, in Gath, and in Ashdod some remained. Remember, the Anakim were the descendants of the Nephilim, the giants, these guys that were as tall as Goliath. There were very few of them left, but they were in Gaza and Gath and Ashdod. Well, then chapter 12 lists all of these kings of all these different cities and in multiple cities at times that the Israelites defeated. And then in chapter 13, when Joshua was old and advanced in years, when the Lord said to him, "You are old and advanced in years." "You are old and advanced in years and hard of hearing. And very much of the land remains to be possessed." And the Lord promises and says, I'm going to drive out all these guys from before the sons of Israel, but you need to allot it to Israel for an inheritance as I've commanded you. So it wasn't completely conquered yet, and yet each of the tribes were to be given their portion of land, and that way they would begin to focus their efforts in on conquering the Canaanites that remained in what would ultimately be their property. And so he begins to divide this out, and again, you need a biblical map of Israel or a map of biblical Israel to go through and see how all these divisions are. Or if you have a study Bible, very often it'll show you the divisions of the land with the 12 tribes. And so Caleb, at this point, in chapter 14, verse 6, Caleb, remember Joshua and Caleb are the only two old guys around, right? And he makes the note that he says, "I'm 85 years old, Joshua. I was 40 years old when Moses sent me to spy out the land. And the guys who went up with me, you remember this, that they made the heart of the people melt with fear. But I followed the Lord my God fully. And Moses swore on this day, saying, 'Surely the land on which your foot has trodden will be an inheritance to you and to your children forever, because you have followed the Lord my God fully.'" So Moses blessed him and said, "Wherever you go, you're going to be blessed. Where you're going to conquer, anywhere you go, you're going to be victorious." He says, "I'm 85 years old, but I'm still as strong today as I was in the day Moses sent me. So this is what I want, Joshua. Give me the hill country about which the Lord spoke on that day. For you have heard on that day that Anakim were there with great fortified cities. Perhaps the Lord will be with me, and I will drive them out as the Lord has spoken." Caleb says, "I'm 85 years old. I want the most difficult part of the land there is, the part with giants, the part with fortified cities. And I'm going to go in there. I'm going to continue to follow the Lord fully, and the Lord is going to continue to bless me." Do you know people like this? Do you know people in your Christian life that you just go, "That guy has an amazing amount of faith. He just jumps out and does these things that just seem impossible, but God blesses him and God does this because he's walking faithfully and he's living by faith." And I'm blessed when I see guys like Caleb who just say, "Hey, God keeps his promises. No matter how difficult the scenario is, God keeps his promises." Chapter 15 outlines the territory as it begins to be divided up, all of the land of Israel, that shows all the boundary markers and things. And if you're into surveying and such, that this might be fascinating for you. I'm just going to keep going. From chapter 15, we see that the tribe of Judah gets all the stuff listed in chapter 15. Then the tribe of Ephraim gets all the stuff listed in chapter 16. Manasseh gets everything that's from chapter 17. And they go on and it continues on. Half of chapter 18 talks about what Benjamin gets, and then chapter 19 tells about Simeon's inheritance and Zebulun's inheritance and Issachar's inheritance, Asher's inheritance. Oh, we're just jamming through the Bible now. Naphtali's inheritance, Dan's inheritance. At the end, the very last verse of chapter 19, "So they finished dividing the land." Now, if you've ever been on a read through the Bible in a year, or maybe you've been reading ahead and you're like, "Does Ron want us to read this stuff?" That's like a great sentence to read. "So they finish dividing the land." You're like, "Yes, okay." Also in chapter 20, the Lord says, "Hey, it's time to designate the cities of refuge." Now we're on this side of the Jordan. We have three more cities of refuge to designate. Remember that the city of refuge was the place where if you unintentionally killed someone, you took off. You ran to the city of refuge before the guy's brother or his dad or somebody, the kinsman, the blood avenger, they called him, till the blood avenger chased you down and killed you for killing his brother or his son or his dad. You went to the nearest city of refuge. so that you wouldn't die by the hand of the avenger of blood until you stood before the congregation and your case was heard, and then you would be found to be innocent and allowed to stay in the city of refuge, or you would be found guilty and you would be killed by the avenger of blood. Chapter 21, the sons of Israel gave the Levites their cities and in their inheritance, so they belonged in each of the tribes, and yet they apportioned out to the Levites the pasture lands and the way God had told them. Chapter 21 ends with a great statement. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass. So Joshua summons the 2.5 tribes that had wanted to stay and had left all their livestock and their wives and kids on the other side of the Jordan. And they had the men had come into battle, but it's the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. And Joshua said, okay, it's time now to go back. Go to the land of your possession, the one that you wanted to inherit beyond the Jordan. Go ahead and go back. And so they did. They went back, and this is where a problem began. Because Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh, it says in chapter 22, verse 10, built an altar there by the Jordan, a large altar in appearance. Man, you know, you're not out of the land 5 minutes and you build an altar. Don't you remember that you're not supposed to offer sacrifices anywhere but the place where the Lord establishes his name, where the Ark of the Covenant is, where the temple is, where the tabernacle is? The sons of Israel hears this, and the whole congregation, it says in verse 12, gathered themselves to go up against these guys in war. They're gonna go slaughter their brothers for falling into idolatry, and so soon. They confronted them in verse 16. What is this unfaithful act would you have committed against the Lord, God of Israel, turning away from following the Lord this day by building yourselves an altar to rebel against the Lord this day? But then they said, hey, if this was rebellion, verse 22, or if in an unfaithful act against the Lord, do not save us. Wipe us out right now. If we did this out of rebellion, kill us right now. But that's not why we did it. They said in verse 26 that we decided, you know, we're on the other side of the Jordan and we're separated by this very physical separation here. So they said, let's build an altar, not for burnt offering or sacrifices, but as a witness to say, hey, the place, you know, you're tied together with those guys. You're to offer to the Lord over there. We didn't build this to, you know, fall into idolatry. This was a memorial to the Lord. They said we made a copy of the altar of the Lord so we could say to our kids and say to the generations after us, this is not for burnt offering or for sacrifice. It's a witness between you and us. And that's what they called that. They called it witness. And so the guys who had gathered together for war said, oh, sorry about the misunderstanding, and they left. Well, Joshua's old, advanced in years. He's going to die. And he tells them in verse 11, of chapter 23, take diligent heed to yourselves to love the Lord your God. If you ever go back and cling to the rest of these nations, which remain among you and intermarry with them, and so that you associate with them and they with you, know with certainty that the Lord your God will not continue to drive these nations out from before you. They will be a snare and a trap to you, a whip on your sides and thorns in your eyes until you perish from off this good land which the Lord your God has given you. Now behold, today I'm going the way of all the earth. In other words, he's going to die. And you know in all your hearts and your souls that not one word of all the good words which the Lord your God spoke concerning you has failed, not one of them. All have been fulfilled for you, not one of them has failed. It shall come about that just as all the good words which the Lord your God spoke to you have come upon you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the threats as well. Hey, how many of us hold on to the promises of God and say, we know that God works all things together for good, and we're just trusting that and stuff. What about all the things which say, if you walk in unrighteousness, you're going to be judged, you're going to be punished? Well, I don't want to believe that. I just want to believe the good things. Joshua's saying, the good promises have come true, the bad promises will come true as well. And so in verse 24, or chapter 24, verse 14, he says, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and truth. If it's disagreeable in your sight to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your father served, beyond the river, the gods of the Amorites, They said, hey, you know, he says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Choose, he says. If he doesn't say choose between the Lord and these other gods. He says, if you're not going to worship these gods, choose another god. Choose who you're going to pick. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. And they said, hey, far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods. Joshua said, okay, your witness is against yourself that you have chosen for yourselves the Lord to serve him. And they said, we are witnesses. At the end of the book, chapter 20, or verse 29, it came about after these things that Joshua, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. So Joshua died serving the Lord. He had been faithful all the way through. He hopes the Israelites will be faithful all the way through, but he knows better. He heard what God had told to Moses, and it wasn't going to happen. But they were witnesses against themselves. They said, we will serve the Lord. Let's pray.